Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And now we bring to the microphone our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2 who joins us each week at this time. Corey, what's going on, my man? How are you?
Oh, just loving life at this time change. Outstanding.
I'm sure that you are. Everyone loves a good old less or one fewer hour of sleep on Sunday. Hope that everybody has enjoyed that thoroughly.
More light at night, Corey. More light at night.
I do like that, but I wish we could just keep it that way.
Me too. Hopefully we can get to a point where that happens. So, Corey, we were having a discussion in the last segment, and this stems from a discussion I think Pro Football Talk was having about Derrick Henry. And look, we get it, the running back position, it's at a different spot than it's been probably throughout the history of the NFL in terms of the longevity of running backs, the usage of running backs, the contracts that they sign now. But if you're Derrick Henry, they were having this conversation, do you sign the big deal and remain kind of the bell cow guy where you're taking a toll on your body physically? Or do you consider maybe going somewhere where they've got, you know, some other running backs where you can split carries, split time on the field, and maybe that extends your career? Joe and I kind of both came to the conclusion that Derrick Henry's probably not even considering that. He wants the money. He wants to be the guy here in Tennessee long term. Where would your thoughts be on that question?
Well, I think he wants the ball. I think they all want the ball. I don't think any of them want to go split carries anywhere. And everybody who says this was the best fit for me, it's always whoever offered them the most money. So he wants the ball, and he wants the money. Now, having said that, I do expect the Titans to draft a running back because they do – they can say whatever they want. 400 carries I don't think has ever been sustainable for anyone over a long period of time.
Yeah, no, we're just talking about the same thing, Corey. I think certainly that's got to be a priority in the draft – to get an actual compliment to him. What about the idea? What about, though, the idea, you know, because obviously you're going to try to find one, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But do you think Derrick Henry can be utilized more on third down? I mean, do you think that there's a benefit at all to just even having him out there in third and medium plus more often?
Well, I mean, I think there's a benefit to having him out there because he's a weapon. And they've got to pay attention to him. But he's, you know, he's not the crispest pass receiver, and he's not the best pass blocker. I do think his pass blocking has gotten better, but that wasn't hard because it was not very good when he got started here. So I don't ever want to feel like Derrick Henry's a liability, but when it comes to third down or when it comes to just, you know, having a pass receiving threat out of the backfield, you know, I think they can, you know, you've got 53, potentially, 56 guys on the roster. You know, you need to have a guy who can do more. I mean, you know, you have a guy who can go out there and do it. I mean, because when Derek's out there and they throw him the football, it's like a boxing match when that thing comes his way sometimes. And, you know, I think they can add another element to their game. Now, you know, you reach the situation like where when Deion Lewis is in the game, you know, last year you felt like, okay, here's a pass now. You can't have it be like that. You know, like with the Saints, with Kamara and Ingram when they were at their peak, you know, Kamara caught a billion passes, but he's also carried the ball a lot too. And so you never felt like it was pigeonholed that way. So the Titans need to draft a guy who's a dual threat back there. And I'm not saying to replace Derrick Henry, but to compliment him, because I always use the Saints as the model. You know, you can have two, you can make two work, and you can make two work really well.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us. And Corey, kind of a draft need that Joe and I have talked about the Titans potentially pursuing is a speed receiver, a threat down the field to kind of take the top off the defense. Khalif Raymond was able to do that to some degree towards the end of the season. Should the Titans be comfortable kind of staying in that direction with Raymond, or do you think that's maybe a piece they could consider adding in the draft as well?
Oh, well, don't ask Mike Vrabel about that, or you get your head bit off at the combine. But, you know, look, the simple fact was is they didn't have a speed guy. And so when they brought up Khalif Raymond, I thought that was a great decision because he added an element to their team that they did not have. I think he played 4 snaps in Baltimore, and one of them went for about, what, a 50-yard touchdown?
Yep.
I mean, so, yeah, there is space for that speed guy. I don't know how big of a priority. I don't know how early you go with that. I think it depends on, you know, what's available when you're picking. You know, because they have other needs. You know, they need depth at corner. They need depth at the pass rush, and they need depth in the offensive line. You know, a starting right tackle probably, and they need depth at running back. You know, and so you just have to weigh what's out there with what's available there. You know, with the speed guy. You know, as well, because I'm not saying you know Khalif Raymond's the answer to all their problems, but Khalif can play special teams. He's a good effort guy. Good team guy, and he can run. I mean, he can run, and he's shown he can catch the ball in traffic. There's a lot about Khalif that I like. That doesn't mean you don't look to upgrade when you can, but, you know, they've got other needs as well, so it's got to be the right guy at the right time.
Well, based on that answer, you're on the side of they probably just – Conklin's going to have to be a casualty of the situation, you believe.
Well, the only way they keep him, Joe, is if they franchise him. I mean, that's the only way. Because he's going to make more than Taylor Lewan did, which is kind of silly, but that's the market with where we're at, and that's the value of offensive linemen. Somebody's going to come in. There are so many teams that are going to be in the market for Jack Conklin, and somebody always overpays, so I expect somebody to ridiculously overpay, whether it be Denver or Cleveland or Miami or the Jets. There are a lot of teams that are going to be in the market for Jack Conklin. And so if the Titans want to keep him, the only way they can do it is to franchise him, because then somebody would have to give up, what, I think 2 first-round picks to get him.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's doing that. But at that point, he would cost $16 million. Is that right?
It's in that neighborhood, yeah.
And then, you know, how are you going to keep him? I mean, they're going to have, I expect, in the neighborhood about $70 million in space when it's all said and done. And after they sign a quarterback in Derrick Henry, that's probably going to eat up, what, $45 million of it? So you'd be down to $25 million
left
at that point.
Right.
So if you sign Jack Conklin at 16, then you're sitting there with about $9 million left over, and you signed 3 guys.
Yeah. That's tough to do.
That darn salary cap. that darn salary cap will get you.
I heard the owners wanted a quarterback salary cap, which you kind of get, but you know what? You can have some self-control. You can have some negotiating power. You can work. Do your job.
Corey, last thing for you here. It was a big win for the Predators over the weekend. Back-to-back shutout wins against the Dallas Stars. Another up-and-down nature of this team over the course of the past week.
Yeah.
What have you made of the Predators over this last stretch here as you've watched them play and as they continue to make a push for the playoffs here down the stretch?
I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to make of this. I just don't. It's just when I thought, you know, because I was on this show where I was like, hey, you know, I think they're in the playoffs. I think they got it. I think that, you know, because of the way they're playing. And then they come out and they throw a couple of turds on the board. You're like, holy cow. You know, they're not. And then they rally against Dallas. And look, Dallas is the team where, when they play Dallas, I'm just like, they're not tough enough. And they're just going to get boxed around. And so to come out and do what they did against Dallas is really impressive to me. And again, I get more to the way they're playing than what the score is. And, you know, to see them playing these one goal games, and to see Tenorti out there and the new guy, Holzer, you know, and to see Roman, you know, Rossi throw a cross check at the head of Corey Perry, I'm like, okay, you know, is this it? Is this team, you know, getting there. And maybe the expectations are that they're just getting all the way there too quickly, and it's probably not fair that they get it, that, you know, think they're getting it all back. But, you know, they're starting, you know, to show stuff. It would be nice to see it every night. But gosh, that thing's a mess last night. I think Minnesota won late last night, I believe.
Yeah.
So they're there about a point up, but a game in hand. And it's such a mess because I think you got four or five teams right there within a point of each other. And, you know, I think the Preds have 28 points available left. And what do you guys think? It's going to take about 18, 19?
Yeah, right in that area.
Right about right.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I'd like to say one way or another, but I can't because I can't say anything one way or another from night to night. Now, having said that, it looks like it's UC Saros' net, you know, especially after back-to-back shutouts, but even before then it was looking like that. And if he can be a hot goalie to finish the season, then you like your chances because everybody loves a hot goalie. And this is the first stretch of the season where it looks like the Preds have had a hot goalie.
Corey, this has been an excellent segment of math from you today. I'm really impressed. You know, you may have lost that hour of sleep, but your math is on point today.
I am excelling. I have a 7-year-old at home, and you know we've got some major things to work on. She was asking me the other day, we were playing some game in the pool, and she was asking me if I could keep score. And I just like, are you kidding? I keep score for a living. That's what I do, but it just doesn't always register.
Just got you covered. No big deal. Corey Curtis from News 2. Has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Corey, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it as always.
All right. Thank you, fellas. Glad everybody's okay, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, you too. Same to you.
All right.
See you, Corey. When we come back, we're going to dive into that conversation about the Titans maybe adding a speed wide receiver. How much of a priority should it be for John Robinson? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Thanks to Corey Curtis from News 2 for joining us in the last segment. Jimmy Dykes from the SEC Network will join us at 8 o'clock. Casey Alexander, Belmont men's basketball coach, will join us at 8:30 to break down an exhilarating game over the weekend between Belmont and Murray State. And then, of course, Darren McFarland joins us at 9 o'clock like he does each and every week. Joe, we were talking in the last segment about the Titans and maybe potentially adding a speed threat at the wide receiver position. We saw Khalif Raymond come in towards the end of last season. Didn't play a ton of snaps, but the snaps he did play was very effective, had an element in that wide receiver room with his speed that really nobody else on the team has. I mean, Corey Davis has got decent speed. A.J. Brown can run. But none of those guys in that room right now, even Adam Humphries, guys like that, nobody would really be classified as a burner. So how much of a priority should that be for the Titans and general manager John Robinson this offseason to add that threat to their wide receiver room? Or would you just say, you know what, we have Khalif Raymond, let's bring him back, let's see what he can do, and just ride it out that way?
Well, it's just like anything else when you talk draft in March is – yeah, you, it's hard. You can't answer it until you see what happens in the free agency. But if Corey Curtis is right and Jack Conklin is elsewhere, so now we know about the pass rush need. If Conklin does go elsewhere, does that get addressed in free agency? I don't know. But I think even if you do, you may still want to go there in the draft. I don't think there's any question you have to add a corner at a relatively prominent spot.
Yep.
We've talked about the running back situation. I think you've got to try to find a guy to replace Deion Lewis, and I believe will be elsewhere next year. And so then you go through all those needs, and then are you trying to draft a starting right tackle or I guess a right tackle to, you know, pair with Dennis Kelly, and you know, it's maybe at some point be your starter. Man, that leaves very little room to address this. But I still think this is something that should absolutely be a priority somewhere on the board. I mean, there's a guy I think is a fascinating player, and he doesn't translate you know, because he's not big, and sometimes guys like that, you know, it doesn't translate to the NFL. But KJ Hamler from Penn State is a burner. And I know that John Robinson has been to at least one of his games this year, and he goes to tons of college games and tries to see tons of guys in person. He's an interesting situation. But, yeah, I mean, it's just until you know what has been addressed, what has been lost, what has been gained out of free agency, it's hard to know. If they have to go in with this group next year, I think they'll feel good about A.J. Brown, Corey Davis. You know, Humphreys definitely gives them a nice element in the slot. And as you said, Cleve Raymond made big plays, and Cam Batson was hurt this year and is supposed to be back. So I think they'll feel okay about it. But, yeah, if you could find a way somewhere in there to add more vertical threat, I think that would be good for this offense.
It almost seems like a bonus, though, right? Because, you know, potentially, you know, the right tackle spot could be a need. Cornerback, I think we both agree, is probably a need. Another running back to complement Derrick Henry is probably a need as well. This, to me, and when you're talking about a receiver and adding another receiver to this group, probably not a need at that point. It's probably just a luxury that if you can, and if the right situation comes along and you can add to that group, then you do it. But I don't think, you know, when you start looking at the first, you know, 3-4 rounds of the draft, and like you said, not knowing what the Titans are going to do in free agency, you would think there would be, you know, 3 or 4 needs that they have on their roster that creep into their thought process, and that they probably have to address before they take this route and potentially address the speed receiver position.
Yeah, it would seem to be. I'm not as convinced as Corey Curtis that there's no way that they have Jack Conklin next year. And again, the tag usage or non-usage is going to be fascinating here. What they decide to do there, I think there are, you know, obviously multiple possibilities. But, yeah, if it goes that way, you're right, it becomes a luxury pick. KJ Hamler, by the way, you know, he's 5'9".
Yeah.
He did not run at the combine. He tweaked a hamstring, so he didn't run. I think he'll run at his pro day. But he says he runs a 4.27. And actually, I believe him.
It's pretty fast.
Like if you watch him, he is a straight burner. But again, you know, 5'9", 175. That's a guy in this league who, you know, it's you see these little fast guys sometimes.
Then again, I mean, Tyreek Hill is 5'10", 185. So it's not like he's a ton bigger than KJ Hamler would be.
So if that's the thing, everybody's trying to find the next Tyreek Hill. And K.J. Hamler fits the profile. John Ross, you know, came out the same year as Corey Davis out of Washington. That was a guy, you know, so far it has not worked out. But that was another one of those guys, smaller, a burner. It's hard to find a guy like that that can work out. But, you know, Tyreek Hill has been durable and can go into traffic and make tough catches and things like that too.
He can. And, you know, I don't really know if Cleve Raymond's able to do that or not. There wasn't a ton of opportunity that he had last year. Certainly made some big plays when called upon, especially in the Baltimore game when you think about that play-action pass from Tannehill to Raymond deep in that game. Maybe he's a guy that, you know, at the end of the day, you go through all the decisions you have to make in free agency, in the draft, and the needs that are on your roster, and you look around and you say, you know what? We're comfortable with Cleve Raymond. He can play special teams, like Corey Curtis pointed out there. We all know, you know, what a kind of a struggle it's been for the punt return game, even the kick return game to a certain degree. And Raymond can certainly do those two things if called upon. So maybe at the end of the day, John Robinson looks around and says, you know what? We're comfortable with Raymond. Let's give him another shot.
Yeah, and I mean, look, A.J. Brown could still potentially do more vertically as a route runner. I mean, he's got good speed. And, again, you know, Cam Batson was a nice player the year before. Got hurt in camp, missed the year, but they like him a lot. Batson and Raymond are absolutely quintessential Titans locker room guys who, you know, tough road to hear. Both of them, like, great, you know, students in college and just all around, it's like you want guys like that in your locker room. It still comes down to what can you do in the field, but I don't think that they would be fretting if this receiving core they have now is basically what they come back with next season.
Which is amazing, because how long have we been talking about the Titans, not only with the quarterbacks and just not really having quarterbacks that you feel comfortable with, but receivers have been a huge part of that discussion as well. I mean, even heading into last season, everybody had big expectations for Corey Davis. Adam Humphries came in, so you felt better about that, but nobody really knew what A.J. Brown was going to become. They thought he had the potential to be a good player. I don't think anybody expected him to be as good as an impactful as he was last year. But this receiving room, you know, Taywan Taylor we talked about, you know, potentially being a piece at one point, he's gone. You know, Justin Hunter they spent a second-round pick on. DGB they spent a second-round pick on. I mean, they've been trying to get their receiving core to a position to be this deep and this talented for a long time, and it seems like they've finally gotten there with this group, or at least are on the track to getting there.
Yeah, well, and finally drafting a guy who is really good right away.
Yeah.
And the drafting of receivers has been a struggle. Kendall Wright, another guy who you know did some good things here, but still, ultimately, that didn't work out. So, yeah, it's like, I mean, even, you know, again, Davis, 5 pick for Davis, that's always going to be tied to him, and so it's a disappointment, but he's still a pretty good player. You know, I mean, Stillman and I had this argument. Stillman goes to fill in player name sucks way too quickly. It's not – Corey Davis doesn't suck. I mean, like, come on. You know, but he can be better. He's got to be better. I still think if you're the Titans, you feel like Brown-Davis could be a nice tandem, and maybe Brown helps lift Davis to more production this year.
Yeah, no question about it. It's going to be interesting to see what they do and how much of a priority John Robinson puts on that this offseason. And we're getting closer, Joe. Free agency right around the corner. Before we know it, the NFL draft will be here. It's almost time to start making some actual moves.
Yeah,
thank God.
Can't wait.
Can't wait for that either. When we come back, we'll get back into the Preds. Big weekend they had with the win against the Dallas Stars. Also, look back at Roman Yossi's cross-check to the face of Corey Perry and the gloriousness that was on Twitter for Preds fans. We'll be back next on Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, big win for the Predators over the weekend, 1-0 against the Dallas Stars, capping off back-to-back shutouts for the Predators against the Stars. UC Saros in net for both of those. Defensively right now, playing pretty well as of late. Obviously, the Edmonton game withstanding in that third period, not so great. Corbinian Holzer's come in, man. They're a defensive juggernaut ever since he's come in the fold.
Just don't give them McDavid and Dreisaitl, and they're okay.
I think most teams would probably adopt that strategy if possible as well. If we didn't have to play against McDavid or Dreisaitl, be in pretty good shape.
So that's just to make sure. I know we talked about it earlier, but I want to make sure I have it right. It's Corby?
Corby.
Corby. Corby's the key.
Yeah.
Corby has not allowed a goal.
Corby has not allowed a goal. And that's basically my biggest reaction from the weekend. Holzer needs to play from now on. That's what it is. It's not an overreaction at all.
And obviously, you know, we joke because it's like, you know, this has been the key all along and all that stuff. I do think that it looks like a kind of nice third pairing.
Decent third pairing.
And the last time that I can really remember thinking, like, they're okay, like, you're fine, was I guess it was 3 years ago when Irwin and Weber had a pretty nice thing going there with a third pairing. I mean, really, since then, it's – I mean, and I understand.
It's third pair.
It's the NHL. Yeah, third pairing problems are, you know
– pretty common.
They're pretty common in this league.
Yeah.
But if the Preds could feel good about that, and one of those guys is a guy who pushes people around, who pushes his teammates around, that's not bad.
Yeah. Let's go to Nate, who has called in wanting to weigh in on the Preds. Nate, thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Morning, guys.
Morning, Nate.
It's a great day to be alive when Yossi cross-checks Barry in the face and only gets a $5,000 fine. With that being said, the Department of Player Safety should be renamed to the Department of Player Brutality. I mean, my goodness, it's amazing that that only gets $5,000. It's not even a suspension. I mean, I'm kind of surprised, but not really, with what they have done.
Thanks for the call, Nate. I do think that this year has been very difficult to pinpoint exactly which direction the Department of Player Safety is going. And by that, I mean you'll have cross checks like Robert Bortuzzo where they get suspended. And obviously, this doesn't even compare to the one where Robert Bortuzzo had on Victor Arvidsson. But I think a lot of players around the league, you've seen Evander Kane from the Sharks even tweet about this in terms of like citing examples of plays that have happened that have resulted in suspension. And then you have plays almost identically that happen and nothing, like no penalty gets called, there's no suspension, nothing. And I think that's been the most frustrating part for players in that you don't know what is not only what is a penalty sometimes and what's not, but more importantly, like what is a suspension, what is worthy of a suspension and what is not. Now, I don't think Roman Josi's was suspension worthy, but I do know when you start getting up to cross checks in the face, it's a fine line that you have to cross at that point.
The inconsistency is frustrating.
It's
also, I think you could honestly, if you went through any league, you could easily find instances of that. You know, I mean, you're never going to find pure consistency. I think a couple of things about the Josi cross check. One, I think Corey Perry sold the heck out of it.
He did.
I understand it ended up, I mean, when I watch it, it's almost like Corey Perry shrunk down to make sure it was high, and then he crumpled like he'd just been shot. But I also think that fine, I think Nate's probably right. $5,000 fine, that's pretty light for that.
Well, that is the maximum allowed, though, in the
CBA. Okay, $5,000 is the maximum allowed on that particular play. No suspension, then, to Nate's point. The no suspension. Yeah, I think you could probably even have more of a more severe hit, and because of who you're hitting, you're probably going to get a little more leniency. I mean, I'm sorry. I think that Corey Perry gets hit more often, and probably when he's on the other end, I'd love to see like a recap of that. If like penalties are lighter when a guy like that is the target just because of who he is. I mean,
if you hit Brad Marchand in the head, like,
yeah, right.
Is it the same thing as hitting?
You get a bonus.
Yeah. Look, reputation is a real thing, not only in the NHL, but professional sports. Like, there are players that have a reputation. Like, back to the Pistons days, Rasheed Wallace, he got a whole bunch of technicals. I'm sure there are instances where Rasheed Wallace, he probably didn't deserve a technical. But he got it because he's Rasheed Wallace.
Yes. And Draymond Green now.
Yeah, Draymond Green now. I mean, this happens in sports where you develop a reputation either with the officials. And look, I mean, the officials, their job is to be non-biased, and they're to keep it, as even and as professional as they possibly can. But they are also human beings, and they know, like, okay, this guy talks a whole lot more than this other guy. This guy dives a lot more. Like, you see it all the time in the NHL. There are guys out there that are known for embellishing and known for diving, and you can't tell me that officials aren't looking for that more with those guys than they do with other guys around the league. I mean, it's just human nature. That's the way officiating works.
No doubt.
That's just how it is.
No, I mean, it's just like, the NCAA selection committee is going to be picking these teams for the tournament, and there's been a lot of talk about the Lady Vols, maybe their streak ending, which I think they ended anyway by, coming back to beat Missouri. But like, to me, you can go through all the numbers and all this stuff and say, okay, this profile versus this profile, still human beings in their head, it's the Lady Vols. They're going to be in the field. Last year, I think Belmont got an at-large bid because of what they've done and because Rick Byrd, what people, their profile, honestly, you could easily make a case they shouldn't have been in. They got in. I mean, they were right on the board. I think human beings making any of these decisions like this, punishments, fines, your track record, whoever they're judging, is going to be in their mind no matter what they say.
Yeah, and that's part of it. And maybe it shouldn't be that way. But that's, at the end of the day, that's how it's been. And it, I don't know how you really overcome that, because there's always going to be a human element, not only of, you know, making mistakes and calls on the field, but also you have a bias every now and then. I mean, there are officials that don't get along with certain players. I mean, it's just the way it is. And you try to not let that affect the game as best you can. And I think most of the time officials do a good job with that. But when it comes to players like Corey Perry, like Brad Marchand around the league, who are in the news more for this type of thing, for who have a history, you got to look for things like that. So maybe there are instances where Corey Perry takes an elbow to the head or takes a stick to the face like he did on Saturday, and you look at it as an official in live action, like, okay, I mean, I'm sure he was in there doing something to warrant that, which, I mean, if you go back and watch the replay, he was. He did slash Yossi right in the leg.
Oh, no doubt. And it's Yossi too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Yossi,
he's not afraid to cross-check.
Well, he's not, but I still feel like his reputation with officials, I would guess it'd be
pretty good.
Pretty good, just in terms of the way he comes at them and stuff. I mean, obviously his role as captain is to interact with them. He's the one who talks with them on things. Obviously, guys get mad and scream and yell at here and there, but Yossi, to me, seems like he's pretty contained most of the time.
Most of the time. Now, he has gone nuts about two or three times this year, but that's going
to
happen.
Sometimes, yeah. But he's a guy who's going to get the benefit of the doubt more often than not.
Now, for those people who have texted us and called us saying, man, I wish Roman Yossi, he was more demonstrative. He's a better captain and a better leader. What do you think now?
What
he
do
just
you
cross-checked Corey Perry right in the face. That sounds to me like something Jay Weber would do.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, come on.
That's some
captain
type stuff.
Got to give credit where credit's due.
Well, you win two in a row, and now he's a good captain again.
Yeah, he's back to being one of the best captains in the league.
There you go.
It's amazing how the seesaw continues here.
It's all about his captaining.
It is all about his captaining. One day he wakes up, the captaining, you know what? I'm going to be a really good captain today. I'm going to come in. I'm going to lead. I'm going to throw some things. I'm going to take my stick. I'm going to put it in another human's face.
Scream
like, it's
at gonna some
be
guys.
A good, it's going to be a really good day here on the ice. I'm going to scream at a few people, and then other days, it's like, you know what? Just not feeling it today.
Yeah, just let the guys go skate around, and we'll go lose.
I did that, to be honest with you, when I went back and watched the game Saturday night, that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh, look, there's the people that have been waiting on him to do something and get crazy. He cross-checked Corey Perry right in the face, and now all the Preds fans love him and his leadership style.
There you go. You can wear the C again, Roman.
That's right. Congratulations to Roman Yossi on that front. What's, a big win for the Preds.
By the way, what's his nickname? We were going through nicknames. Just Yos.
It's
just
yeah.
Yos.
It's just Yos.
See, again, like, he's got the E on the end of it.
Yeah.
So, he like, you take everybody's name and put an E on the end of it. Whatever, E, E, E. His name is perfect. Just call him Yossi.
That's not a nickname, though, but Joe. What, that's his name.
But just call him Yossi. It's a name that's already a built-in nickname.
You can't have your captain not having a nickname. If everyone else has a nickname and your captain doesn't have a nickname, what kind of a captain is that?
But you don't, you can't, you don't, all names are not meant to be mangled, to be turned into some hockey nickname. Some of them are already ready-made, perfect, two-syllable, ends in an E. Yossi. Just call him Yossi. I don't, Yos. Come on.
It's endearing. That's why they do it.
It's you're trying too hard.
What is your hockey nickname? Is it just Rexy?
I guess. Yeah.
I don't know if we ever determined one for Munson. We tried Munson. He was not a fan of that.
Right. Well
there's a Max Muncy.
There is a Max Muncy.
There's a Muncy, Indiana, too.
Yeah. There you go. It's
sounds like an awesome
for this.
Sounds like an awesome place.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. We'll try to determine Munson's nickname on the other side of the break. When we come back, a tough loss last night for Nashville SC in their second ever game in the MLS regular season. We'll discuss that next. You're listening to Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. But first, 102.5 The Game is your local donation station. We're accepting donations to help in the tornado disaster relief efforts. The Nashville Community Resource Center is in need of the following items: tarps, rolled plastic, hand sanitizer, laundry detergent, work gloves, and trash bags, just to name a few. Donations will be accepted Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. here at our studio located at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike in Nashville. To see the full list of items, go to thegamenashville.com/donations. We'll be right back here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, I got a pair of tickets to give away. It's an exciting time this morning.
Uh-oh.
Pair of tickets to give away to Nashville SC as they take on the Columbus Crew on Saturday, March 21st at Nissan Stadium. Call in, or not call in, text into our text line, 615-737-1025. The first person that texts in to 615-737-1025 to get this question right will win tickets. And the question is, outside of Walker Zimmerman, who was the last player for Nashville SC to score a goal in the regular season? So you're going to have to go back to the USL here. I know they've played two games. They got a 1-0 loss last night against Portland.
And this does not include the playoffs.
Because they did go to the playoffs.
Regular season goal.
Outside of Walker Zimmerman, who was the last Nashville SC player to score a regular season goal? And you have to go back to last season in the USL. So text in 615-737-1025. First person to get those right will win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC face the Columbus Crew on Saturday, March 21st at Nissan Stadium, which I know, Joe, I think you and I will both be at.
Well,
maybe.
It's NCAA tournament first weekend.
Well, maybe not.
So we will
maybe
see.
Maybe I'll be there.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get to go to the first one. I'm looking forward to, as we go ahead here, going to more, because I love some Nashville SC soccer. As I watched the end of that game last night, and it was, you know, it was one of those things where you look at the shots on goal and the shots attempted. Another game where Nashville SC, they had control of possession. They had more attempts. They had more shots on goal than the opposition did, which you would not expect to happen this early into their tenure. I mean, they did the same thing against Atlanta United, lost the game 2-1. They give up the early goal again against Portland, go down 1-0. And are just never really able to find the equalizer after that. They had a couple chances. Walker Zimmerman had a beautiful header attempt as time was getting close to expiring in that game, and it went just wide. And you could tell, like, right when it went off his head, he thought that thing was going in. And Taylor Twellman on the broadcast even talked about it. He thought it was going in, too. Just sailed wide. And another decent effort for Nashville SC. Just weren't able to get the offense going. And that's one of those things where, you know, Walker Zimmerman's a really good player. He scored a goal in the first game, probably had the best chance of the game this past game. You got to find somebody else to come in there and get your chances because, you know, as a center back, he probably shouldn't be the guy generating the bulk of your offensive chances, or at least getting the best ones at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in general terms, you know, from the striker perspective, maybe this team doesn't have, you know, quite enough to be with the top teams in the league. I mean, it looks like it's going to be a solid team that, as you said, they had possession. It's one defensive mistake in each of the first two games of their existence leads to a goal, and then for the most part, solid. But do you have enough, you know, in terms of just an offensive player who can make things happen? I mean, I think this team's probably going to be in a lot of games like that. I guess that's sort of, in terms of expansion, you know, teams in professional sports, you see it a lot. Not always. Here and there you'll have, you know, a team. I mean, in the NHL now things are a little different. You can get really good players right away as an expansion team in the NFL, or NHL, as we've seen. But I don't know. It just seems like you're going to see a lot of games probably like that, and then they've got to figure out a way to generate more, you know, quality chances, not just shots.
Yeah, and you got to find a way to finish. Like, you know, Gary Smith has been a guy, really ever since he's been here in Nashville, defensively you feel like you're going to be in pretty good shape. You're going to be able to defend well. You're not going to give up a ton of looks the other way. And our friend Bob, who tweets us every day here on the show, has talked about this. He said, you know, Gary Smith is a guy that, you know, offensively, sometimes it's a struggle. And I think we knew that heading into this season. We've talked to Drake Hills from the Tennessean about the identity of Nashville SC and what it was going to be. And he said, you know, they're going to be defensively sound, which I think they have been for the most part so far. There have been some breakdowns in both games early on that have been a problem. They've got to find a way to correct those. But other than that, I think they've been pretty solid defensively, not giving up a ton. But offensively, the question was, okay, where's the goal production going to come from? Where are the consistent quality looks going to come from, and the players that could finish when they get those looks? And so far through two games, that's been the biggest struggle for them, I think, is once they get there and they have their chances, who's going to be that guy that finishes? And that's what they were talking about on the broadcast yesterday. Twellman was talking about that a little bit. That's going to be, I think, maybe the most interesting part of this team to follow as they move ahead here, because I think they've proven in the first two games they're going to be competitive. Like they're going to hang in these games. They're going to win some of these games as well. But it's finding that consistent threat offensively that I think they're still searching for.
And you're starting off against really good teams.
Yeah,
Atlanta United FC, Portland Timbers, of course. You know, great. They really got a good thing going up there. Now you go to Toronto FC Saturday, 3:00, and before you come back home for two straight. So it's certainly also not an easy road to start. You're testing yourself against what are supposed to be some of the best teams in the league this year.
You are, and I think, you know, the possession part of it has been maybe the most surprising part to me, because, you know, Drake has talked about they're going to be a team that wants to possess the ball. Well, you can say that, and that's fine. But I had my doubts coming into the season, like, okay, like, how effectively are they going to be able to possess the ball? And I think the possession was in their favor again last night after it was fairly even against Atlanta United. I think Nashville had a slight disadvantage in the possession in terms of the overall possession in Atlanta United. But last night, they're right there again. They're generating chances. They're spending a lot of time on that side of the field. Now, I also thought Portland did a good job, especially late when Nashville SC was trying to make a push of, you know, they had a lot of things going on in the box, but they were just never able to get a shot off. Portland did a good job of any time other than that corner kick late where there was danger there. They did a good job of getting it out of there quick, sending it back downfield and going back the other way. And they had a couple rushes, Portland did, where I was like, oh boy, they're about to make it 2-0 and put this thing away. And they missed on one. I sent a ball right through the box. Nobody was there to head it home. But it was close. But other than that, I mean, I thought Nashville SC, they had their chances. Zimmerman had a look. They had another look. I think Rios had a look right around the net earlier before that and sent it wide. It hit the outside of the net, and you could tell the fans behind, they thought it was in and just kind of threw their hands down because they thought Nashville SC had tied the game. But close and close, but you got to find one of those guys that's going to finish on those chances, and that's what Twellman was talking about yesterday. That's a process, I think, to try to find. And that's going to be Gary Smith's challenge as they move forward here. Okay, who are those guys that you can rely on to score in those situations, and how can you get them to do it consistently? And some of that comes down to you can't go down early in a game like they did. That's happened twice to them now. You got to find a way to keep it even and eventually hopefully play with a lead and see how that changes the way you're attacking the game and how much better you're able to defend after that.
Yeah, and chemistry between players is still a thing. Sure. You have to keep in mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still very early, of course, and some of the, you know, so it's who can do it and who can do it together. Have you got a correct answer?
Oh, we have a winner.
Oh, you got
Daniel
a winner.
Daniel Rios is the answer. So he is obviously on the MLS team now and was part of the USL team last year as well.
How long did it take? How long did it take someone to?
First person. First person to text was right.
Boom.
Bam.
And we've had several come in after. So
we even got a Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, Ryan Tannehill. Multi-talented like soccer player. Great athlete.
But not Tom Brady.
Tom Brady's foot speed does not translate to soccer, I don't think. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jimmy Dykes from ESPN and the SEC Network. We'll look ahead to the big SEC tournament coming into town this week. That'll be next. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.